fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Tremendous Thursday to you. Welcome to the Cale Clark Show. So glad that you're with us. We've got a lot to talk about today, a lot going on in the world. If you want to get in on the conversation, give us a call. 1-888-914-9149 is the studio number to call. Toll free, 1-888-914-9149. And as always, you can try me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. That is my handle. You can also try the show account, at Cale Clark Show, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E, show. Or you can email us, cale@relevantradio.com. So much to talk about. Wow, I'm just so pumped today because, you know, as a big sports fan, tonight is the NFL kickoff, the first game of the 2020 NFL season. We'll see if we can get through a full season. Last night on the show, we talked about Kansas City Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker, who is a practicing Catholic, and his conversion story. It was really exciting to hear that. And he's going to be kicking in the game tonight as the defending Super Bowl champs, Kansas City Chiefs, take on the Houston Texans. And another sport that's going strong in the playoffs, obviously basketball, the NBA. My Toronto Raptors live to fight another day yet again. A nail-biter, an instant classic, a double OT win in Game 6 against the Boston Celtics, setting up an incredible Game 7 tomorrow night. So excited about that. We've got some serious stuff to talk about on the show, too. Today is World Suicide Prevention Day. So you need to be aware of signs that might be in the lives of your loved ones who are maybe contemplating doing this. Maybe they're struggling with depression, especially those who are young. We'll tell you how to look out for those signs and how you can help them. And how a priest really wrote a beautiful blog post about the tragic suicide of singer Chris Cornell and how that affected him and how he wished he could have helped him. That's coming up later in the show. But first, want to talk about a very, very high-profile, heavyweight conversion to the Catholic Church. Over the years, obviously, notable figures have converted to Catholicism. One of them is going to be confirmed in the Catholic faith this Sunday, September the 13th, at the Cathedral of St. Raymond Nonatus. We talked about him not too long ago on this program in Joliet, Illinois. That's where the cathedral is. It's also the home of the Blues Brothers. We've talked about that in the Chicago area, in Joliet. We're talking about Mark Galley, the former editor of Christianity Today magazine, which is a very, very famous publication in the Protestant world. It was founded by Billy Graham himself. And Mark Galley, who was a former pastor and for many years was the editor of Christianity Today magazine, is going to be converting, is going to be accepted into full communion with the Catholic Church on Sunday. Now, you might have heard of him in recent months because he was probably the most well-known evangelical in the world for a little while back in December, because he wrote an editorial calling for the impeachment of President Donald Trump and saying that he was profoundly immoral, quote-unquote. So he got a lot of heat for that, including from President Trump himself, who attacked him on Twitter. And so he became very, very viral at that moment. That is not what I want to talk about today. I don't want to get into the whole political angle here, but I do want to get into some of the reasons why Mark Galley, who is a very, very well-known evangelical, is becoming Catholic. By the way, he recently retired from his post at Christianity Today in January. He spent 30 years there as a writer and editor there. And he said this, and this is reported by Religion News Service about his conversion. Mark Galley said, quote, "I'm not rejecting evangelicalism. I'm only taking Anglicanism deeper and thicker." Now, he's coming from the Anglican tradition, but he spent a lot of time outside of that as well in various Protestant traditions. And that's really interesting. He says, "I'm only taking my Protestant faith deeper and thicker from where it was before." And that I can relate to that because when I came back to the Catholic Church as a revert, one of the first events I went to on my way back into the church, I was invited by a priest who was helping me, was answering my questions about Catholicism. And at the time, I was an evangelical pastor myself. he invited me to go to a mass for the feast day of St. Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei. And I went to that mass. He said, listen, go to the mass. I'll be celebrating that mass. And then afterwards we can have lunch. We can talk. And when I went to that mass, well, it paid off in a couple of huge ways. Number one, that was the day that I actually met my wife. So that was huge, absolutely huge. But when I was there and I was seeing these families, these Catholics who are quite obviously taking their faith super, super seriously, it reminded me very much of the best that I saw in evangelicalism. People trying to integrate their faith into everyday life. People serious about living it. So I can identify with that. I said, wow, this is really the best of evangelicalism. So Mark Galli is saying something very similar. He's saying that he's not really throwing away or considering himself not an evangelical anymore. He's considering himself an evangelical Catholic, an evangelical Catholic. Very interesting stuff. He also gave an interview recently to Word on Fire, the Word on Fire Institute. And he said this, he said, many evangelicals who discover the dark side of the evangelical movement become quite cynical. And many evangelicals who become Catholics tend to look back and despise their evangelical past. I've never been tempted to do that, he said, because overall, they've been a force for good in the world. They remind me of some of the more heroic Catholics I'm aware of in their ability to make tremendous sacrifices, serving in some of the most troubled places on the planet to share the gospel. I've been proud to be a part of that movement. And in many ways, I became a Catholic, not to reject my evangelical convictions, but merely to ground myself more deeply in them. In some ways, I now consider myself today an evangelical Catholic. End of quote. Very similar to something that Father Richard John Newhouse, who was, of course, the original editor of First Things magazine, very popular journal. Father Richard John Newhouse, who he was also born in Canada, was a Lutheran pastor for many, many years. But even when he was a Lutheran minister, he was actually living apostolic celibacy just because he wanted to have what he called freedom for ministry. It's kind of interesting. But when he became a Catholic priest. Obviously, the rest is history. He's passed away now. But Father Richard John Newhouse once said, my becoming a priest in the Roman Catholic Church will be the completion and the right ordering of what was begun all those years ago. Nothing that is good is rejected. All is fulfilled. All is fulfilled. And this is really very similar to what Mark Galli is saying, the former Christianity Today editor, who is going to be received into full communion with the Catholic Church on Sunday in Joliet, Illinois. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. If you want to talk about this, call the studio line, 1-888-914-9149 is the toll-free number to call. So he's going to take the confirmation name Francis, after St. Francis of Assisi, because he was incredibly moved. Some years ago, he was doing a story on church history and studying the life of St. Francis, and he was just incredibly moved by the example of Francis, by his austerity, his self-denial, and obviously his total love for Jesus. But at the same time, as he was writing this story in the daytime, in the evenings, Mark Galli was reading St. John Paul II's encyclical, The Splendor of Truth. And he says he became deeply impressed not only with the mind of Pope John Paul II, but he said to himself, it's amazing that the same church can produce somebody like Francis of Assisi and also John Paul II. You know, that's really a moment that he said that, his senses, his mind started to really accelerate thinking about this process. And, you know, he could add so many other saints, too. They're so varied. They're so rich. You know, I believe it was G.K. Chesterton who said, you know, sinners are all the same. They're all cookie cutters. They're all boring in a certain sense. You know, it's the same old sins over and over again. It's the saints that are so wonderfully different. Vive la différence. Think about people like Mother Teresa. All the great saints of the church, they're so different, yet the same church produces them all. Not a cookie cutter faith in any way, shape, or form. So, interesting that he said, I'm not rejecting evangelicalism. He was obviously drawn to the church. And he just really kind of got sick in many ways of all the splintering and divisions within Protestantism. And it just kind of left him exhausted thinking about that. And he began looking into Catholicism more and more and more. But along the way, He started off kind of as a Presbyterian minister. He's actually a Reaver too. He was baptized Catholic, but his family began to attend an evangelical church when he was quite young. He attended seminary, became a Presbyterian minister. As he began getting more interested in liturgy, sacraments, church history, he first became an Episcopalian, which is kind of the American version of the Anglican Church, and then he became an Anglican because he was upset about the ordination of an openly gay bishop in the Episcopalian Church. He joined this breakaway group, an Anglican group in America, and then he became Orthodox. He attended an Orthodox church for a little while. I don't think he actually became Orthodox. Let me check that. But he did attend an Orthodox church. He was quite interested in that. And he eventually started to attend an RCIA course. And the teacher of that course, John Ellison, who was also a convert, he could tell that Mark Galley's mind was really, really made up. And his RCIA teacher, John Ellison, said this. He said, "Once something commends itself to you as true and real, even if it's inconvenient, you either look the other way and pretend you didn't see it, or you do something about it." And that's a great quote. That's a great quote. Because really, the only good reason to become Catholic is because it's true. That's, again, G.K. Chesterton, another convert to the faith, said that. Why are you Catholic, he was asked? Because it's true. If you're not doing it for that reason, you're doing it for a human reason of some sort. And we've spoken about this earlier on the show. Mark Galley said, "I want to submit myself to something bigger than myself." And this is a really interesting quote. He said, "One thing that I like about both Orthodoxy and Catholicism is that you have to do these things, whether you like it or not, whether you're in the mood or not. Sometimes whether you believe or not, you just have to plow ahead. I want that. If it's left up to me, I am one lazy son of a..." I'm not going to say the word, but SOB, okay, or the initials. "I am one lazy son of a gun," let's say. "I will not do anything unless someone comes along and says, you need to do this. This is really important. This will shape your life. Come on, Galley, get off your butt." End of quote. And that's really interesting because I have a lot of evangelical friends who... they love God. I mean, they love Jesus. They talk about him all the time. But a lot of these guys, they don't even go to church on Sundays. They don't even worship. They're not part of any kind of believing community. And I find that really strange. I find that very, very strange. Mark Galley, who's becoming Catholic on Sunday, entering into full communion, he kind of just said that, you know, there's a tendency towards, and this could be something personal too, spiritual laziness in all of us. He's like, "I need a plan here. I need a plan for holiness. And I think I can find that in the Catholic Church." And I can identify with that too, because there was definitely a time in my life when I was in my evangelical years, and even during my Catholic, after I came back into the Catholic Church, where I felt like I was only praying when I wanted to pray, when I felt like it. I needed a plan. I needed some sort of a spiritual game plan to provide a sort of a skeletal substructure to my spiritual life. And I did find that eventually with the help of spiritual direction. But I can identify with this whole thing of, you know, spiritual laziness and only praying when you feel like it, only worshiping when you feel like it. The good thing is in the Catholic Church, you know, it's not really an optional thing. You know, unless you're dispensed from Mass because of a pandemic, you know, the Sunday obligation at least is in effect. So there's at least that. You know, it's a kind of a, obviously a lowest common denominator point. You want to go much higher than that. But at least that is there. At least that is there to spur you on. Another interesting thing that Mark Galley said was that, he said, "Catholics live with a paradox," he said, "that I find extraordinary." And this is something that really attracted him to the Catholic Church. He says, on one hand, there's an incredibly high call to live a life of holiness, to give one's whole self, heart, soul, mind, and strength, loving Christ and living for him. But at the same time, there's kind of a calm acceptance of the fact that we are miserable sinners and that we might not even come close to living the life of holiness to which we aspire. He says, quote, "The Catholic Church is the church of both Graham Greene's whiskey priest," quote unquote, in his book, The Power and the Glory, who despite his many moral weaknesses is still used by God. That's on the one hand. And also, it's still the church of Father Damien, the saint who ministered to lepers at the cost of his life. The one message that comes through every time I go to confession is that we serve a merciful God who has the highest expectations for us and whose mercy towards us is even higher still. It's not holiness or mercy. It's both and. It's both and. So yes, we have a God who wants us to become a canonizable saint. And that is the entire goal. The reason why we're baptized for two reasons. When you boil it all down, we're to become saints. We're to become the best versions of ourselves. Canonizable saints. That's what we should be aiming for. Because if our goal is just to slip into heaven by the skin of our teeth, what happens if we miss? That's a pretty low goal. That's a pretty low bar. Shoot for the heights of heaven. Become a canonizable saint. And this is the only way. This is the only time that we have to do this, by the way, in this life. I was listening to on Relevant Radio, In Conversation with God, you know, so beautifully read by Chuck Neff. He's got such a smooth voice. In Conversation with God, you know. And today's meditation was on merit. You know, it's only in this life that we can earn merit with God, because in the afterlife, it's too late. It's too late. We can only reap the rewards or the punishments, as it were, but we can only earn merit in this life. So this is our chance. This is our time for soul making, to let the divine sculptor mold us into who he's created us to be. So he's created us to be saints, number one. That's the call of our baptism, to become saints and to help other people to become saints as well. Holiness and apostolate, holiness and evangelism, sharing our faith, helping other people along the path to becoming another Christ. That's what it's all about when you boil it down. So great expectations on one hand, to become a saint, but also divine mercy. You know, the Divine Mercy Chaplet. It's prayed every day during the Drew Mariani show. Jesus, I trust in you. We don't have a hope. We don't have a prayer without the mercy of God. We need both. And that's why the fatherhood of God is such a great analogy, because he's a father who has great expectations for his children, but he's also incredibly merciful. They cannot refuse to embrace the wayward son or daughter back into his arms when they are truly repentant, when they are truly sorry. And so that's one of the things that Mark Galley has found in the Catholic Church. That's one of the reasons why he's going to be confirmed in the faith this Sunday. So this is pretty big. This is pretty big. In recent years, I think about Francis Beckwith, who used to be the head of the Evangelical Theological Society, who's also become Catholic. So this is very much along those lines. And obviously, if you are in the habit of, you know, tuning into the Journey Home program on EWTN, I've been a guest on that show before, there's a parade of people who have come into the church or come back to the church, as in my case, who've wandered away. And the list is getting longer. And this is incredible. One of the things that Mark Galley said that the Catholic Church can offer the modern world is, he says, steadfastness. In a world that's in turmoil and confusion, people don't know their left hand from their right, they're swimming in a sea of relativism and despair, the Catholic Church can be a solid rock upon which one can build a firm foundation, a sure foundation for life. So, really interesting that he's doing this, that he's making this move. Another thing that he said was, in his interview with Word on Fire, he was asked the question, what advice would you have for people struggling with their faith and discerning a call into the Catholic Church? And this is interesting. If you're listening to the show, and you are listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, if you're listening and you're not Catholic, but you're very curious about it, you're interested in it, you're somewhat drawn to it, hear what Mark Galley has to say about this. People struggling with faith may be discerning a call into the Catholic Church. He said this. He said, listen to the struggle. Pay attention to it. When we're most uncomfortable, that's often when the Holy Spirit is doing his most fruitful work. keep asking yourself why you have this question or that concern, the deeper why. Because we tend to think that many of our objections to the faith, they're intellectual, first and foremost. Without denying the importance of the intellectual coherence of faith, it's also good to recognize that many of our intellectual doubts or concerns or questions are actually existential in nature. And so here's an example of this. He says, quote, I was once having an evangelistic conversation with a friend, and I answered every single one of his questions that he had about the Christian faith. This is obviously back during his evangelical days. And Mark Galli goes on to say, I was at my apologetic best that night. I was at my best, but it was all for naught. Because at the end of our conversation, my friend said this, Mark, what you said makes perfect sense, but I can't become a Christian. Because if I did, I would have to start living as Jesus commands, and I'm not willing to do that. That was very honest, you know, what his friend said to him. And let's face it, a lot of our doubts are, they're not intellectual in nature, they're more existential, as Mark Galli puts it. You know, I don't want to change my life. And he says this, pay attention to your doubts and struggles at the intellectual level, but especially at the existential level. That's where you're going to meet the merciful Spirit of God, but also the discomforting Spirit of God. You know, when you feel uncomfortable, you know, when you think that God is pushing you to something higher, what happens? You really have two choices. You can either go with that and attack it, or you can pull back. And that happens in a lot of ways. Like, even within the Catholic faith, that can happen very, very easily. A call within a call. The other day we were talking about Mother Teresa and her call within a call. Well, sometimes, you know, you might be Catholic already, but you might get a vocational call to marriage or to religious life or to another vocation in the church, maybe the priesthood. And sometimes when people see that, they walk it back. They walk it back because they don't want to make that commitment. They don't want to trust God further with their life. And the sad thing is, on the other side of that, taking that step, as scary as it might be, there is a wide open space of freedom. And this is what Mark Galli discovers. He talks about the freedom that he feels, you know, within the church, you know, and its traditions and its magisterium, its teaching office. It's almost like a horse, you know, running in a beautiful meadow that's fenced off. You know, there's a lot of freedom, you know, and the fence is there to keep you from going over the edge, you know, and from danger, but there's so much freedom there within those boundaries. And that's really exciting. So congratulations to Mark Galli. We need to pray for this guy. And hopefully many, many people will say, hey, if Mark Galli finds this persuasive and finds this convincing, maybe I should take a look at it too. Maybe I should look into this as well. And that's what can happen. And, you know, he's a known guy, but we all can influence somebody. It's really important to know. Give us a call. 1-888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We'll be back right after this very short break.
Day 3, Holy Virgin of Virgins, pray for us. This is the third title of Our Lady in the Litany of Loreto, as we pray for 54 days for the needs of our church and the nation. In our contemporary Western post-Christian culture, virginity is rarely appreciated, hardly expected, and commonly misunderstood, as if it were weakness of character, when in fact it's the opposite. Consider the lives and examples of some of the great saints who were virgins and completely committed to Jesus Christ. The Blessed Mother, St. John the Apostle, Santa Maria Goretti, St. Damian of Malachi, and many others. They all stood strong at the foot of the cross. They all gave themselves without reserve to God at a young age. St. Josemaria had a special insight into the power of prayer of virgins when he wrote, next to the prayer of priests and of dedicated virgins, the prayer most pleasing to God is the prayer of children and that of the sick.
Receive these free daily messages by signing up at relevantradio.com/novena.
The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans are available at relevantradio.com/Forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. So glad that you're with us on this Thursday, September the 10th. The Remedy, great tune from Jason Mraz. And listen, the remedy to a lot of our ills is the teachings and the praxis of life within the Catholic Church. And the Eucharist, of course, is the remedy of remedies as well. And so Mark Galley, who is the former editor of Christianity Today magazine, is converted to the Catholic Church, and he will be confirmed and receive the Eucharist on Sunday. One of the things he said was when he was a Protestant pastor, he discovered the Anglican Book of Common Prayer, and that's one of the things that got him thinking about a lot of these issues, because, and I can relate to this, because during my evangelical years, I did this a lot. Rather than formulating his own sort of unscripted prayers in his morning prayer, he started using, you know, the magnificent written prayers of praise, confession, thanksgiving, supplication in the Anglican Book of Common Prayer. And he thought to himself, that's what I want to say. I want to pray like that. And it's so true that liturgical prayer is sometimes so much better than anything we can come up with on our own. As evangelicals, very often we're called upon to pray, you know, extemporaneously. And I remember as an evangelical minister, I often had to, at the congregation where I served at, I had to lead the congregation in prayer, and I'd have to come up with these sort of high priestly prayers. And man, it's so true. You come up with these trite phrases that you use again and again and again, and they're just really not very eloquent. I remember one time the senior pastor, I was the associate, the senior pastor that I was serving with, this stuck out in my mind during prayer for the congregation. It was around like Halloween. It was the fall harvest, that sort of thing. I remember during his prayer, he said, "God, we thank you for apples mellow and pumpkins yellow." I thought, what? It stuck in my mind, but man, was it ever corny. That is super, super corny stuff. So yeah, I agree. Liturgical prayer is often better than anything we can come up with ourselves. Anyways, we're not that creative sometimes. Speaking of creatives, the world lost a very creative light. You might have heard that Diana Rigg has passed away, the British actress who became very famous playing Emma Peel in the iconic 1960s spy series, The Avengers, died on Thursday morning, just this morning, at home with her family. And this was on the news and social media. She was a style, you know, maven for sure, if you remember her. She also starred in the one 007 movie, the one James Bond movie, starring George Lazenby as 007. Yep. Remember this theme song? It's a great theme song. On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And a lot of people say that that movie was actually much more faithful to the original 007 novels of Ian Fleming than a lot of the other films. I have to ask Josh Raymond about that, who works at Relevant Radio, one of our executives here at Relevant Radio. He's a huge Ian Fleming fan. He reads the books. And last time I talked about James Bond, I'm a big fan of the James Bond movies, but I got to confess, I have not read any of the Ian Fleming books. I know, and I got a lot of emails from people last time we talked about James Bond. Oh, you didn't get Ian Fleming right about this, yada, yada, yada. That may be true. But anyways, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, actually a great movie. It's pretty good. And in that film, Diana Rigg starred as Tracy DiVincenzo, who actually marries James Bond in the movie. Yes, James Bond was married for a very, very short time, and she had convinced him to leave this dangerous life behind. But tragically, she is killed by Blofeld, Bond's arch enemy. I think I just blew the movie for you in case you haven't seen it. It's still worth watching, trust me. Blofeld was played by Telly Savalas in that film. Remember Kojak? Interesting. Anyways, so Diana Rigg, a lot of people thought she was the best Bond female lead in all of the films from her performance in that film. It was really well done. And it's sad that she passed today. She recently starred in Game of Thrones as well. That is a series that I have not gotten into. I have not watched, haven't watched it, but she played the Queen of Thorns and apparently did a great job and was working, you know, right up until, you know, very close to the end of her life. So rest in peace, Diana. And, you know, she obviously died of cancer. It was diagnosed in March, so it progressed very, very quickly. And all of us do have to contend with health issues, and eventually we are all going to pass away. The great tragedy in life is when, well, there's a lot of them, many tragedies in life, but one of the things that we have to be consciously aware of are people that may be looking to take their own lives, and this is an uncomfortable subject to talk about, but today is World Suicide Prevention Day, and it is important to mention this at least in passing. And today there was another article on NPR.org about how teen suicide is on the rise, especially during the time of the pandemic, because people's schedules have been thrown into all kinds of chaos and confusion. A lot of schools are only partially open, that sort of thing. And at the end of June, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention tells us that based on a survey of 10,000 Americans on mental health, that almost 11% of all the respondents said that they had seriously considered suicide in the past 30 days. But for young people, for those ages 18 to 24, the number was 1 in 4. 1 in 4 people, 25%. That's twice as high, more than twice as high, have considered tragically taking their own lives in the past month. So people are very, very worried that there's going to be a big spike in suicides among young people as they're cut off from, you know, some social relationships because of the pandemic. They're spending a lot more time at home. Unfortunately, in some homes, these teens are very, very likely to have access to lethal weapons, to guns. And that's something that people have to be consciously aware of. If you do have a gun in your home, you need to make sure that it is safely locked away, because guns in the home are a huge risk for teen suicide. In fact, this is a sobering stat. In the last 12 years, 10 to 14 year olds, suicide by gun increased 214% in the last 12 years in the United States. So that is something to be very much aware of. And this article in NPR actually quoted a 17-year-old student who actually tried to attempt suicide. And he said, I credit my parents for keeping their guns safely locked away. That probably saved my life because I was definitely looking for that weapon. So what can you do? What can you do if you're a parent and you're maybe thinking that you have a teen who might be depressed or maybe contemplating doing something like this? Nobody wants to think about this, but we do have to look out for warning signs. And so a psychologist by the name of Lisa Damore, who is an adolescent psychologist, who was interviewed for the piece, she said, here's some signs that you're going to want to look out for as parents. A red flag is when a young person is sad, but it's more than a passing mood. Yes, we are sad from time to time, but if this sort of sadness continues on, this cloud never really lifts, that can be an issue. Pay attention to teens staying up very late at night, having time to themselves. That's not necessarily a problem, but if someone is holed up in their room for days at a time, spending a lot of time alone, that's a red flag. If a teenager talks about possibly harming themselves or wanting to disappear, that's something that a parent is going to want to ask some questions about. Are you trying to let me know that you're upset about something? That's a good question. Try to hear them out and listen to what they're saying without kind of judging them in the moment. Anger. In teenagers, depression can take the form of irritability in particular, says Lisa Damore, adolescent psychologist. teenagers sometimes get depressed and can seem like a prickly porcupine, she says, and everything and everyone can rub them the wrong way. And they're like that often, and sometimes it's easy to miss that there might be something more under the surface, that there's something more going on than somebody simply being a snarky teenager. So those are signs to watch out for, and parents should try to find opportunities for sports that can be played in a safe manner, volunteer opportunities or work or anything that can allow teens to maybe spend some social time with other adults that care about them. So that's something to think about. Something very, very sobering. And there is a hotline that people can call if you or somebody that you know might be having suicidal thoughts. 800-273-8255. 1-800-273-8255. It's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And that's a sobering topic to talk about, but it's an important one because a lot of people are struggling with mental illness. And very often, they don't want to talk about it, especially within the church, because they're seen as weak, maybe spiritually weak. They think it's somehow sinful if they're depressed, and it's something that needs to get out in the open. Tim Fox, who works here at Relevant Radio, alerted me to... The other day, we talked about Chris Cornell on the program, who wrote one of the James Bond theme songs for Casino Royale. It's my favorite James Bond theme song. And an incredible performer he was. What a talent. And he tragically took his own life recently. And Tim Fox alerted me to a blog post from a priest friend of his, Father Charles Clamoot. And he talked about, really in beautiful words, how he wished he could have helped Chris Cornell and anybody really who's struggling with these sorts of thoughts. And he quoted a Chris Cornell song, and here are some of the lyrics. "Nail in my hand from my Creator, you gave me life, now show me how to live. Now show me how to live." Powerful words, powerful words. And he talked about Father Charles Clamoot in this blog post about how, you know, when he was younger, you know, he's a big musician, he used to look at his musical heroes as kind of mythical figures, larger than life, practically gods with a small g. He always thought they were way happier, better off than he was. But the thing is, that's often not the case. That's often not the case. And very often as fans of performers or other famous people, he says that, you know, we kind of use these people in a certain way. It's a one-sided relationship. The artist's job is to be brilliant, to give their all, sacrifice their all so that, you know, fans can feel good thanks to a song that, you know, in many cases they don't even pay for. In return, we might pay big bucks to go to a live show once or twice and cheer. But in the end, I go home, I move on, I get on with my life. But the artist doesn't often do that. Very often they're living on the road, living out of vans, buses, hotels, far from family and friends, any type of normal rhythm of life that enables, you know, sort of normal people, quote unquote, to live stable existences. And what do these people do? What's it like to step off stage and back into the mundane world of bottled water, ashtrays, and subway wrappers, as Father Clamoot puts it? And he says, as I grow older, I no longer envy these musical heroes. In fact, I kind of feel bad for them. And they're in a system in which they're kind of set up to be used and discarded. And we can be like vampires, sucking them dry of their creative blood and then moving on when it kills them. Wow, those are powerful words. And he says, who was Chris Cornell? On the one hand, the voice of a generation. A dude most every Generation Xer who ever dabbled in rock and roll at some point wanted to be. A guy whose voice was so drenched in masculine, I can't even say the word, in masculineness that a mere listen could grow your beard. Hey, if only that were true, you know, for those listening to the Cale Clark Show, you could grow a beard by listening to the show. He's so masculine. On the other hand, you know, Chris Cornell, I grew up in a broken home. His parents were divorced, and he began using drugs and stealing and learning to play the drums when he was a teenager. When he was 15, he began to be depressed. He dropped out of school to play music. And wow, I mean, people don't know this. This guy was a real person who had a lot of pain in his life. He came from a broken home, full of sadness, despite his talent. And Father Clemieux wrote, "A man with a nail in his hand crying, 'Show me how to live,' a man asking for a priest. I wish I could have met him. I wish I could have been the priest he had a chance to talk to." Wow. So that is a powerful blog post by Father Charles Clemieux about Chris Cornell and his tragic death by suicide. So let's be compassionate to others. Let's look out for signs in those around us that they may be suffering on a deeper level. We'll be right back after this short break on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. I have been.
The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. You're with me and you won't let go. So whatever happens, I will not be
afraid. The programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. That's getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant Radio.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
If you take life, do you know what you
The great Chris Cornell, who sang, in my view, the best James Bond theme song for Casino Royale, You Know My Name. Tragically no longer with us. And we talked about the specter of suicide in our culture earlier in the program. And so, again, be aware of the signs for that. Signs of depression in your loved ones. And we'll have other shows about this in the future. It's something that we need to talk about, mental health in the church. One thing I do want to mention, again, on a lighter note, a much lighter note, is that tonight marks the beginning of the NFL season. As a football fan, I'm so looking forward to this. Again, we talked on the show last night, Harrison Butker, the kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs, has incredibly inspiring faith journey. He's going to be active in the game tonight as the defending Super Bowl champions, the Kansas City Chiefs, take on the Houston Texans in this Thursday night game, kicking off the year. You might be interested in knowing, no matter what city you are, if you're a football fan in the U.S., what are the odds of your team winning the Super Bowl? Well, CBS has published, you know, odds here, and I know there's a lot of listeners in Las Vegas, and I'm not telling you to run to your bookie. I don't advocate this at all. But just so you know, the odds makers are setting the Kansas City Chiefs as 5-1 favorites to repeat as Super Bowl champs. Baltimore Ravens have the second best chance, according to odds makers. The Niners are third. The Saints, New Orleans Saints, 12-1 odds. Cowboys, 12-1 as well. A lot of Cowboys fans out there, of course. And Tom Brady's new team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, are also at 12-1 odds to get to the Super Bowl. Here's my pick for the Super Bowl. Now, we'll check back with me in January, February, see if I'm right about this. I think it's going to be the Buffalo Bills. No one circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills, as Chris Berman used to say. I think it's going to be the Buffalo Bills coming out of the AFC facing off against, I'm going to say, Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Got a lot of players want to play with Tom down in Tampa, and I think they're going to make a run. We shall see. I know there's a lot of fans out in Chicago. What about the Bears? What about the Bears? Well, the Bears, my goodness, are only given a 40-1 shot to win the Super Bowl this year. And that's really disappointing. Yeah. The Bears. You know, listen, Chicago fans, you know, I know you're probably really, really nervous about the idea of, once again, Mitch Trubisky starting a quarterback for you. You know what happened a couple years ago with that famous double doink from Bears kicker Cody Parkey in the wildcard game against the Eagles in 2018. Doinked off the upright and again off the crossbar, and that was it. I thought the Bears could have won the Super Bowl that year. I really did. But, of course, the super fans of the Chicago Bears are always faithful. You might remember them. Bill Swirsky, super fans. Remember those guys? Big skit on Saturday Night Live. George Wendt, you know, Chris Farley, all those guys talking about Ditka, Polish sausage, and the Bears.
Okay, I mean, Ditka. It's a family thing, I think.
Ditka.
You know, my brother's in it.
Sausage. Bears.
Yeah, yeah, they would dream about that. You know, that's Chris Farley, you know, in character, dreaming about Ditka, Polish sausage, and Bears. Remember, that was a huge skit on Saturday Night Live around 1991, 1992. And really is the brainchild of Robert Smigel, comedian. Worked on Saturday Night Live. When he moved from New York to Chicago in 1983 to start his comedy career, he went to Wrigley Field to see the Cubs play. And Wikipedia tells the story of this. He said that when he was at the game, he noticed a bunch of large men wearing walrus mustaches, large sunglasses, a look very similar to Mike Ditka, who had just been hired to coach the city's NFL team, the Bears, the year before. And he said there's just a swagger about these guys, and all sports fans kind of have it. And, hey, that swagger paid off because the Bears did win the Super Bowl 20 after the 1985 season, went 15-1, almost had an undefeated season. And, of course, that spawned this classic skit, Da Bears, Ditka, Polish sausage, Da Bears. And by the way, Bill Swirsky superfans were named after Chuck Swirsky, my man Chuck Swirsky, the former radio play-by-play voice of the Toronto Raptors. But he's moved on. He's back in Chicago now. He's the radio voice of the Bulls. And that's where they got the name from. I did not know that until I did some crack research on this. Well, so enjoy the game tonight. Bears fans, grab some Polish sausage and your Ditka sunglasses and... hey, you can watch, and we'll see how the Bears do on Sunday. But I want to tell you that tomorrow we've got an incredible guest joining us. Archbishop Salvatore Codeleone, the Archbishop of San Francisco, will be live on the program tomorrow, and we'll be talking about the rather onerous restrictions that have been placed on the church in San Francisco. San Francisco Mayor London Breed, of course, has decreed that religious gatherings can only be outdoors, and they can only be 12 people strong. That is it. Is this fair? We'll be talking to the Archbishop about this and also about his incredible institute that he's involved with, the Benedict XVI Institute. You'll hear all about it. So don't miss the show tomorrow. We'll be back. I want to thank my Top Gun team, Lucas Holt produced, Patrick Alog screened the calls, and of course, Karen Moran works social media. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.
Day 3, Holy Virgin of Virgins, pray for us. This is the third title of Our Lady in the Litany of Loreto, as we pray for 54 days for the needs of our church and the nation. In our contemporary Western post-Christian culture, virginity is rarely appreciated, hardly expected, and commonly misunderstood, as if it were weakness of character, when in fact it's the opposite. Consider the lives and example of some of the great saints who were virgins and completely committed to Jesus Christ. The Blessed Mother, St. John the Apostle, Santa Maria Goretti, St. Damian of Malachi, and many others. They all stood strong at the foot of the cross. They all gave themselves without reserve to God at a young age. St. Jose Maria had a special insight into the power of prayer of virgins when he wrote, "Next to the prayer of priests and of dedicated virgins, the prayer most pleasing to God is the prayer of children and that of the sick."
Receive these free daily messages by signing up at relevantradio.com/novena.